Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm delighted to have Mickey Huff back again. Mickey, you know, teaches, he's a professor of history at the Diablo Valley College. He's also the, not so new anymore, but I'll call him the new director of Project Censored and the Media Freedom Foundation. The Freedom Foundation, they both support First Amendment freedoms and investigative research. They work closely together, collaborate on various projects, spreading truth. And Project Censored is the media democracy advocacy group. It publishes stories all the time, suppressed or mainstream information, the most vital stuff that people need to know, the kind of topics you hear on this program discussed honestly, openly, in depth, that you never get you know where. And every year, you know that too, but I'll say it again, Project Censored publishes the top 25 stories they choose of the year. I don't know how they ever pick 25, because there are so many important topics and so many good pieces of material, articles or whatever on them. But somehow they come up with 25. They publish them in the yearbook. The newest one is Censored 2011, the top censored stories of 2009 and 2010. And you can go to the Project Project Censored website. I think the easiest way is just Google Project Censored, and you'll find out how you can order the book. They have another link, a URL. You can go to projectcensored.org/store. But do it the easy way. I go to my blog, just Googling Steve Lenman blog, but it has a different name that, I know what it is because I'm, because it's mine, but other people might not remember it as easily. And I tell people who want to access my blog where I keep all my articles chronologically, just go to Steve Lenman blog. So if you want to know anything about Project Censored, just Google Project Censored. And you'll find everything you want on the website. And same goes for the Media Freedom Foundation. Just Google Media Freedom Foundation, and you'll pull it up. You'll see all the information. If you want to know the truth on the most important things that affect our lives directly, those are the places to go, plus lots of good websites. Mickey, welcome.
Thanks, Stephen. It's great to be here, as always.
Oh, it's terrific. I know you're going to deck out a little bit early because you have an event you have to take your daughter to, but we've got a solid 45 minutes. Oh, my goodness, there's so much going on. You name the thing that is bugging you most, and why don't we get right into that topic?
Indeed, there's never a shortage of things that are buggable, particularly about the American corporate media. And the dominance of the corporate media in terms of determining public discourse, public debate, or if, and that's really a poor word. What we end up having, of course, is more of a three-ring circus or something that is amounting to historical bread and circuses in our media structure. And, of course, everybody as of late has caught on to the Wiki meme. Of course, the WikiLeaks, the new release of cables from Julian Assange and company, and there have been some really, I think, poignant voices on the topic. Some, very few, but some have made their way into corporate media. Glenn Greenwald at Salon being one of those. There's actually another piece on Salon from yesterday by Ben Barber, somebody else that much of the time has his head screwed on. the neurons are firing. And it's pretty amazing, Stephen, as you have seen, I'm sure, And this is when the corporate media isn't outright ignoring the most important stories of our time, they're either making a mockery of them or completely distorting the subject or topic, or they're playing one of their favorite games. It's called Shooting the Messenger.
And indeed. So, Mickey, can I give you a piece of breaking news? Well, it's not exactly breaking. Not exactly breaking. You mentioned some of the good folks like Glenn Greenwald getting on the corporate media. Well, guess what? Next week I will get on it as well.
Let me put
it this way: I'll break it slowly, like a slow loading website that drives me crazy. I was invited on Fox News.
Oh, really?
Well,
this is going to be you need to tell us when and where. So
well,
we can
it's
post
not
that.
Television. It's not. It's Fox
radio.
News Radio. It's a Texas affiliate.
I was just on Fox News Radio last week, and I actually had a really great time.
Well, the host of a program read an article I wrote on U.S. prisons, the prison system.
Right.
I've written a great many on the prison system. It really is the outrage of the Western world. There's a lot more about what we do that's the outrage of the Western world, but that certainly is a very, very big one. And I've written so much, including the most horrendous stuff that goes on there, plus the largest prison population by far in the world. But he read one of my articles, and he invited me on. He sounded very friendly. So I don't expect a very hostile reaction on air, but I'll say one thing, Mickey. I will not pull my punches on Fox or anyplace else. I think you know that.
Yeah, both Peter Phillips and I have been on a variety of shows for Project Censored. Of course, not all of them are places where we're greeted politely, let's say. But I always find that just speaking factually and trying to like you say, not pull the punches, not aim with the low blows, but just try to speak factually about what's going on. And with some issues, like we were just mentioning here, the WikiLeaks cables, there's just seemingly very few people that want to actually talk about the contents of the cables and the implications of what these cables may mean, and we instead are treated to one round after another of justification for jingoism at the State Department that allegedly passes for diplomacy. We're looking at people asking to have Julian Assange categorized as an enemy combatant. We have heard people calling for the government to go after him and kill him. This is really tells us a lot about our culture and the status of what passes for allegedly sober journalistic analysis.
I discussed this yesterday with Bob Avily, and
right.
My feeling very strong is, and who can know what's in the mind of the people that run our country, but my feeling is that Assange and WikiLeaks has been around a good while. Way back, I forget how many months back, I've written several times about WikiLeaks, but I wrote an article that I got material from a Pentagon analysis of what WikiLeaks was doing. It expressed concerns, but nothing hostile to the extent of we're going to go out and kill this guy.
In fact, the recent analysis from some folks within the Pentagon, the people at the megaphone, has been that this is going to be it's in the big picture, it's inconsequential in terms of what's being leaked. Now, again, that's also spin, right? Potentially. There's always the potential for spin. We never know who is telling the truth. Of course, you never exactly know what Julian Assange is, what exactly his real take on some of this stuff may be, if we take him at face value or not. And, of course, WikiLeaks is much bigger than him. But I think the point isn't really Julian Assange, and the point really isn't even WikiLeaks any more than it should be Dan Ellsberg or the Pentagon Papers. It's the contents, historically, of the records that are kept about what the empire is doing behind closed doors. It signifies a clear lack of transparency. It signifies a clear lack of respect for the rule of law. And in the corporate media, we saw people like allegedly leading journalists, Wolf Blitzer, at the most trusted name in news, quote-unquote, CNN, just vitriolically attacking not just WikiLeaks, but how could the government let this happen, and how the government needs to keep more things secret from me. I mean, this from an alleged top-tier journalist asking the government, please keep more secrets from me.
If that
doesn't show a picture of what's seriously wrong with a purportedly free society with a free press to safeguard our freedoms, liberties, and so forth, then, you know, I guess you're going to have a hard time waking people up, because, you know, that's a mad as hell moment. You know, that's, speaking of the film Network, you know, I mean, that's sort of like, you know, what we should be mad about, Wolf Blitzer, is the fact that you're not doing your job. Well, let's rephrase that. He is doing his job as a top-paid corporate propagandist and shill for the elite establishment. He's doing his job perfectly well. But we, in the real world, when we think of free press principles, we think that journalists should be holding people in power to account, not protecting the interests of the elite and the establishment. And that's what we see here in WikiLeaks. That's at least what we see, no matter what anyone else would like to argue or debate or cherry-pick out of that. What we see is a complete decay, or of the charade, at least. There's no charade anymore in corporate media in terms of what they actually are designed to do. They're not designed to report the truth, and they're not in the business of reporting what's actually going on. They're shills and propagandists for the powerful class.
Well, there's no question, Mickey, and my listeners understand that very, very well. They've heard that message many times in this program, which has to be one of the main reasons they tune into a program like this. But on the strategy that's being employed, Mickey, by the media, by the government folks that come out and assail Assange, even some of them saying he ought to be killed, he should be accused of treason. He's been a very public figure. He shows up at press conferences in places like London.
Mm-hmm.
If they really feared him, I think they would have snared him a long time ago. He'd either be in prison or he'd be dead. Out there doing what he's doing, I think the vitriol hurled at him is less at him, Mickey, than it is at his message to try to get people not to take him seriously.
I think so. Well, this whole charade of Assange purportedly being wanted for rape in Sweden is, again, another charade. The fact that he somehow catapults up Interpol's most wanted list above some really incredibly awful people, I mean, is mystifying to say the least.
You know what Interpol charged him with? It wasn't rape.
No, I know. That's what I was just going to get at. It's called the lesser crime of sex by surprise.
That's something new, Mickey. I've never heard of sex by surprise.
You know, Mark Crispin Miller at NYU said it sounded more like a theme party. But it was an article on New User. I mean, this is, again, pretty amazing stuff here, that they smear the man as much as possible. And then, you know, according to Assange's lawyers, you know, prosecutors have basically said that he wasn't wanted for rape at all. It's a minor crime, if even, punishable by some kind of fine. So here we have a character, you know, catapulting to the top of the world's most wanted lists for, you know, the equivalent of what, a misdemeanor, a parking ticket. I mean, this is absolutely ludicrous. By the way, this isn't the only attack we see. We recently saw Joe Lieberman, right, pressure Amazon to stop support of WikiLeaks.
Yeah. Yeah.
We also saw PayPal now stopping support of WikiLeaks. And don't forget, PayPal came from eBay, which is Meg Whitman, and everybody in California knows the right-wing corporatist power assault Meg Whitman tried to pull in the gubernatorial election, right, spending more of her own money than any candidate in history, only to lose, thankfully, regardless of what people think of Jerry Brown in California. That's not what the point that I'm making. The point I'm making is we have open, unbridled assaults on democratic institutions by capital now in this country.
No,
we've always had it. We've always had it. But it's unbridled. It's in your face, post-Citizens United. And now we see literal corporatist power grabs where you can, you can't even tell the difference between those that are in elite powerful corporations and those that are in government, in the Senate, in the Congress, on regulatory agencies. They're the same people. It's the same class of people.
Oh, yeah.
They have the same interests, and their interests aren't we the people, and their interests aren't democracy, and their interests are not constitutional principles and rights.
Oh, absolutely, Mickey, and of course we've reached the state. We reached it for certain back in the 1990s under Clinton,
yes,
where Democrats are literally no different from Republicans.
On most of the key issues, foreign policy, economics, et cetera.
The big stuff.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the stuff that's going on now with the wiki elements is also another example of the fiddling while Rome burns. You know, the dollar is collapsing. The number one story from Censored 2011, as you well know, is now actually gaining, sadly, some more attention internationally. Not here. You know, here it's, is Bristol Palin going to win, you know, Dancing with the Stars. I wish they had, the corporate media had a special on Dancing with the Felons. You know, there was very little made of Tom DeLay being finally convicted. The hammer got hammered.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Very little discussion
of
that.
The hammer got hammered. I did enjoy that one.
Had it been a Democrat, though, they would have run breaking headlines, you know, that broke all over the universe about how they're the most venal party in the universe. But anyway, look, the number one story in the Censor 2011 book, which is, you know, it's the, we just did a panel on this in Berkeley last week with Peter Phillips, Elaine Wellen, Jamie Walton from the American Monetary Institute, who actually had a conference in Chicago in your town back in October.
I'm aware of it, and,
yes,
and the man who ran that conference I had on my program just days before the conference began.
Right, and so we just had a discussion about the end of American hegemony, global dominance, and the collapse of the dollar. So while all these people sit around and talk about Assange being a rapist and we should go out and kill him, the dollar is collapsing. China and Russia just agreed last week to trade off the dollar. They're going to be trading in their own currencies with each other. These are parts of the stages they have of getting out from under the hegemony of the dollar. And the trickery at the Fed with their monopoly computer monies and these kind of things, this is eventually going to create a mass economic collapse. And I know you have many guests on your program more expert in the field than I, including Michael Hudson, who have written at length about this. And I know you've written about this. And it seems to me, again, that when we're living in a culture, a society in the United States, where you know, consider this. This Andy Krall wrote about this last week, the new American oligarchy, creating a country of the rich, by the rich, for the rich, right? And consider this again. We're all worried about Julian Assange and rape, and let's go get him. But meanwhile, what's going on? See, that's a classic news abuse story. They don't want to look at what's in the cables. And you know what else the corporate media don't want to look at? They don't want to look at what the statistics show about the steady decline of America. 50 years ago, the wealthiest 1% of Americans accounted for one of every $10 of the nation's income, and today it's one in four. Between 1979 and 2006, the average post-tax household income, including benefits of the wealthiest 1%, increased by 256%, while the poorest saw a modest increase of 11%, middle class only 21% due to two-family jobs. We live in a country where 60 million people have no sick leave, 132 million people have no dental care, 59 million people have no medical, 40-some-odd thousand people a year die because they have no access to health benefits, 2,200 of them last year, veterans. I mean, we could go on and on and on and on.
Oh, there's
down
no
the
question,
list
and,
of the
and,
state of our hyper-real truth emergency about what's really going on in our world. 50 million people go hungry, and Wall Street fat cats are taking home millions and millions and millions and millions in bonuses. They're having record profits while the economy. What is a jobless recovery? What kind of Orwellian doublespeak nonsense is this?
We're
on the verge
of
fraudulent mortgages. I mean, we could go on and on and on and have shows about each one of these kind of topics.
Well,
but
this gives me a chance to segue into one topic that certainly obsesses me. I've written a few times on it, Obama's deficit cutting. Here we have an economy literally in crisis, certainly not for the fat cats. The super rich are doing just fine, and they don't need any help in any way from government. They need no more. They've got all they need, but they're never satisfied because as much as they have, they want it all.
Yeah.
They want it all. But Main Street is really suffering extremely badly. The true unemployment rate is north of 20%. Only jobs that have been created, and there haven't been that very many of them, have been low-paying, low-benefit, part-time jobs. full-time jobs are eroding. A good paying full-time jobs. There just aren't that many of them around anymore. Our manufacturing is overseas. China, Bangladesh, Vietnam, wherever the heck it is. Haiti. I mean, it's outrageous. And with great need in the country, Mickey, Obama has his own deficit-cutting commission. They just came out with their proposals. And there's another one co-chaired by Pete Domenici and Alice Rivlin. I actually exchanged an email with Alice Rivlin, politely chastising her. And she answered me, Mickey, reminding me that we have a deficit problem. Well, I reminded her that I'm well aware of it. But the policies that her commission came up with were absolutely outrageous, and fixing the deficit is a piece of cake if you do it right, instead of wrecking the country.
We're adding more to the defense spending. We're cutting domestic spending. The Republicans, in particular, don't want to extend unemployment benefits. You know, if you just look at the math, and you look at how many people are unemployed or underemployed, and you look at the meager monies that they get through unemployment, and you add that money up versus how much money is it's costing to maintain the Bush-era tax cuts.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, it's not even a question of which would be more fiscally prudent. Not that, and by the way, that doesn't even get into ethics, morality, principles of the government's role to promote the common good or promote the general welfare, as the founding documents say. And these people are so removed, these people on the deficit councils and so forth, and these so-called committees that are looking at it's austerity. You know, the corporate media is making, oh, this election was about austerity.
Well they're all elitists, Mickey.
Elitists about austerity. Elitists can talk all day about austerity because not a day of their life looks austere.
That's right.
So this, and the corporate media is, of course, the mouthpiece of this class. So they want to make it look like, oh, the Tea Party has spoken, and on and on. And it's like, guess what? No, they haven't. They were bought out by Koch Industries. They were taken over by Fox News and Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck. True hardcore libertarian people in this country do not buy the things that are being peddled on the corporate media any more than progressives or leftists do. But it's something that is very difficult to have a kind of conversation with people about, because again, we're fiddling while Rome burns. We're treated to one nonsensical story after another. Newt Gingrich recently said Assange is an enemy combatant and that the CIA should have killed him already, this kind of thing. I mean, this is, again, this in a country that purports to be the land of the free, that purports to have standards of equality and equal treatment. We couldn't even get a pay law passed to pay men and women the same amount of monies. All this under the candidate of hope and change. Right, the first 2 years of the Obama presidency, Democrat in the White House, Democrats in control of the Congress. What more do these people need when they had 60 seats in the Senate? What more do they need? You know, and again, you look at all these people that voted for Obama and said, "Oh my God, Obama's the only way. He's the only way. Even if he's not perfect, he's the only way." Well, that guarantees failure, because if someone is claiming that this is the only way, and people that paid attention to what this guy was all about knew that he was going to be tepid at best in reversing the atrocities of the previous 8 years. Again, these folks are drinking the Kool-Aid, and I'm sad to say, even though the free press people fight a very good fight, very good principles in our minds at Project Censored and the net neutrality issues, and they've done fabulous work, but at that last media reform conference in Minneapolis, it was like a cheerleading squad for Obama and the Democrats. And that and anybody that was to the left of that was basically shut out as being a naysayer, and they need to get on the boat and figure it out, right? And now, of course, they're all decrying the recent FCC decisions and saying, well, the net neutrality, yeah, I don't know, maybe we should usher in that tiered system. So but here's the thing. These people have been crying for reform, 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 and now they have their Democrats, and now they have their Democratic FCC. Where are the changes? Where is net neutrality? Where do we see the breakup of these behemoth communications propaganda monopolies? We don't. So when are these folks going to realize, as long ago, in fact, it's always good for us to dig into the pages of history. If we go back and look at the reform move, so-called reform movements back in the 19th century, this is, again, one of my favorites, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, right? said, "Reformers who are always compromising have not yet grasped the idea that truth is the only safe ground to stand upon." Not compromise, necessarily. Not, oh, the Democrats are going to save us through reform. I mean, again, this shows that there's really a lack of understanding, in one sense, of history, or at least at the very best, looking and cherry-picking moments in history, rarely, but sometimes, when reform did work. But it only works temporarily.
Well, Mickey, I hope you sum up where I stand on the issues. I absolutely agree. There is no room for compromise, and I put it another way. If somebody asks me what I stand for right over wrong. And I know what right is, and I know what wrong is, and I'll never compromise on that, and I literally can't tolerate anybody who will. It amazes me, though, and it disappoints me. I think there are some honestly good people who support Obama, support Democrats.
Right.
If not believing, then maybe hoping somehow they'll get a better deal than under Republicans. But they're living in a dream world.
Well, hope doesn't make reality. This is exactly correct.
Oh, well, that's exactly right. And I don't know what went on at the last Free Press conference, but that really disappoints me to hear that. I do know that one of the people who gets involved, I imagine he was at the conference, John Nichols, who writes for Nation Magazine.
Peter just sat on a panel with him not long ago.
Oh, I have quoted some awful stuff from him on the side of Obama. I mean, saying stuff that absolutely disturbed me greatly, let me put it that way. And I quoted him, letting him use his own words. But I mean, it's just terrible stuff from a guy who supposedly is on our side of the fence, but he's betraying us by the stuff that he stands for. And, of course, Nation Magazine is the same thing. I've quoted them a number of times.
Well, the Nation Institute. This is all big money.
Yeah.
This is the progressive money, right? There's a handful of these official, you know, the ones that are officially seen, you know, as the mouthpieces of the so-called left in America. And if you really juxtapose some of the things, and I look, some of these are great publications, some of these are great institutes, and we both agree there's a lot of good work that comes out of them. But sometimes the things that come out of them are so astonishingly pro-establishment and so astonishingly so ludicrous as to pretend that compromise and reform is going to exist in a structure taken over by corporations. There's no democracy here. That, you know, one wonders, who are their paymasters or what Kool-Aid are they drinking?
Well, that's the first thought on my mind. When these people, they're not stupid, and they claim to be on our side, but when they go against basic stuff that you and I support, Mickey and so many others, my first thought is, who are their funders? Where are they getting their money from?
Well, at Project Censor, the funders are the people that buy our books and support media democracy in action.
Oh, yeah.
So we invite people to go to projectcensor.org and see more about it.
I can't imagine the Ford or Rockefeller Foundations, George Soros crowd, would ever give Project Censored two cents.
I formerly challenge them.
I mean, they ought to. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come right back.
Thanks, Stephen.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
What will be the impact of the Tea Party on the upcoming midterm elections? Who are these Tea Partiers? Are they really only a bunch of right-wing rednecks? Listen in every Thursday night from 7 until 8 Eastern to A More Perfect Union as your host, Bill Thompson, gets the inside stories from actual Tea Party players. Call in with your comments and questions, challenge guests, or show support. A More Perfect Union, Thursday nights, 7 until 8, only on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hey, did you miss your favorite show? Don't worry, PRN has you covered. Just log on to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and go to the archive page where you can choose from any of our great programs. Listen or download shows from yesterday or even ones dating months back. The Progressive Radio Network, striving to make your lives easier.
Hi, this is Karen Hartglass, and I am a vegan. No, I am not an alien from planet Vega. I simply choose to eat plant-based foods. Join me on Ask a Vegan every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be talking about everything from soup to nuts. Plant-based foods are the healthiest foods to eat, as well as being the most economical, the most compassionate, and the least destructive. If you want to know more about the healthy, planet-friendly, plant-based diet, call in with your questions. Or call in and share your favorite vegan recipes. Tune in on Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on www.progressiveradionetwork.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I will be coming to you live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I will bring my background as a physician and as an attorney to help you with a minimal pharmaceutical and a minimal surgical approach to your medical issues. Please come join me.
So to join in on the conversation, call 888-874-4888. Ask Dr. Eisenstein, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Progressive Radio Network.
You are listening to Progressive Radio Network.
Back on with Mickey Huff talking about big stuff, WikiLeaks, deficit cutting, Democrats like Republicans, policies that are harming the great majority in the country. Mickey, let me just say this. If there are some listeners that honestly believe Democrats are better than Republicans, I strongly recommend they read an article I wrote a year ago last December, and I called it Obama Year One, Betrayal and Failure. And I just make a very strong case. I think I could take into a courtroom and win the case on exactly what he did and how destructive. And I'm doing it again. I'm doing an article right now. I'll get out after mid-December before the holidays. And I call it Obama Year Two, Continued Betrayal and Failure. And if anybody reads, they're long. Last year was a
two-part
article. They're
sadly very long. I remember last year's.
I mentioned it to Bob Abele because I mentioned that I had Obama's voting record, not the entire voting record, but some important parts of his voting record in part one of my article last year. And if you didn't know it was Obama, you'd think it was a Republican because it was really hard right Republican, very pro-corporate, supportive of Patriot Act, Homeland Security, hardline repressive stuff. It could have been Joe Lieberman voting, not Obama.
And I'm not even pretending that it matters that it's Republican or Democrat, because as you just said again, and as we alluded to earlier, it's a corporatist state. It's a corporate party. Are there some differences between the parties? Sure. But in terms of bottom line and empire expansion, hegemony, supporting the super, supporting their own class, the super rich. I mean, again, things are very clear. And to point out again on this basis, to show how our not only our corporate media but our politicians don't level with us about the significance of what's going on economically around the world. Paul Craig Roberts' recent piece, you may have seen. The stench of U.S. economic decay grows stronger.
Oh yeah.
Again, that's not a very happy. It's kind of a title. However, this is at least business news, right? But there's no Bloomberg, CNN, New York Times, nowhere where this is stated about China having these agreements with both Russia and Brazil now to trade off the dollar. And the dollar, the role of the dollar as the world reserve currency, right, as Paul Craig Roberts reminds us, is one of the main instruments of American financial hegemony. It goes hand in hand with military hegemony. This is story number one from Censored 2011. This was story 24 in Censored 2010.
Oh,
right?
I remember Michael Hudson.
The dollar
again.
Glut. Remember, the dollar glut supports military expansion and hegemony over 750 bases in 130 countries. you know, we're spending over 54% of our budget on military issues. We're borrowing trillions of dollars from China, from other, not that much, but collectively China, Saudi Arabia, other countries in the world to fuel not only then this military hegemony, but it's financial, okay? And we if anybody reads what's going on in the EU right now, right, about the economic crises, not just in Ireland and from Greece, but elsewhere in the EU, these countries don't need the dollar, right? And the dollar is responsible in many ways for wrecking things that are happening there. And don't forget, of course, as soon as the OPEC countries stop the petro oil dollar, right, the petro dollar, but this we'll be sunk. I'm sad to suggest
that would be a major event if the Middle Eastern oil companies stop using the dollar.
And
I know they're concerned, Mickey, because they also have investments. They recycle their earnings back into dollars, and they see the dollar eroding. And
yeah,
nobody wants
have,
to see their investments go
down. I'm very happy that Paul Craig Roberts ended his piece. And remember, your listeners might remember this, but he was the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under
Reagan.
Okay. He was one of the associate editors of the Wall Street Journal, okay? So this isn't Noam Chomsky we're talking about here, right?
I've had him on this program twice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. But I'm glad he ends the article in a way that, of course, corporate media would never do. And he talks about how the American government only seems to have endless resources for wars of aggression, not the infrastructure. Police state intrusions, bailouts of banksters. While, you know, citizens in this country are subjects of ruling oligarchies, literally. You know, one example of that most recently is the whole flurry of attention that was paid to the TSA body scanners, right? And this idea, you know, the guy that don't grope my junk and this kind of business. Well, what's missing from that is it's just the absolute, and it's not just decay, it's the complete elimination of not just Fourth Amendment rights and rights to privacy, but it is a direct assault on human dignity we're talking about. And we have some folks that seem to be standing up about this and saying, hey, this is going a little too far. But if you take a look more clearly at how this is shaking out, it basically says that we're subjects of the powerful and we have no rights. This has been going on since post 9/11. And Cindy Sheehan actually wrote a piece about this recently, about the complacency, the overall complacency of most people going through this process at airports. It's just like how the process began when it was saying, okay, now you've got to take off your belts. Now you've got to take off your shoes. Now you got to get x-rayed. You got to get this massive scan that might cause health problems with people, and people can be seen naked, and they had thousands of pictures downloaded, you know, from the internet. We destroyed the evidence. This is a complete assault on how far can we go? How far can the state and these corporate interests, remember, this is Chertoff Securities, right, that are profiting from all these machines that were quote-unquote necessary. They're necessary to completely usher in the police state, and we all have to accept it because it's for our own good. How long will it be, Stephen, before we walk through scanners at any public building? How long will it be, Stephen, before we have to do this to get onto a bus or a train or anywhere?
Another topic.
I mean, at some juncture, they're just going to put them at your front door.
Well,
you know, I mean, this is
another topic I've written about, Mickey, and the airport business going on right now. It's really it's got a dual aim, as you say, police state intrusion into our privacy rights, and another profit opportunity for the companies that make these machines.
It's riveting again how this is just example number 483, you know, or what have you, of profits over people, top down. Managed control of every element of society, travel, communication, consumption. I mean, again, you know, Google is in the process of taking sites down, taking sites off. I mean, whether or not you agree with Alex Jones or Prison Planet stuff, recently he was taken offline, you know, and then came back up because he was running stories about Wiki and other things. I mean, we're all then susceptible to these behemoths, corporations and the people they put in office. And I say put in office because it's not even in there's not even a buffer. They're not even maintaining an illusion at this juncture, you know, about who controls the society, who controls information, who controls legislative process, who controls your body. this is, again, something that if people are not waking up to this kind of Kafkaesque nightmare, then one wonders, is it all over here? I mean, what's
real
it going to take to wake people up?
It didn't begin at 9/11.
No, it started much earlier.
It was hardened. It was really intensified after 9/11. But you go back to 1996, there was a Clinton Anti-Terrorism Act.
I was just thinking of it.
Oh, that was a horrendous law, and there have been others over the years. And even without the laws on the books, if authorities want to get you for something, they'll just come and get you. And they can charge you with anything, minor or whatever. If they want to put you away, they're going to put you away. And even if there isn't a shred of evidence to be based on, at the very least, they can make your life so miserable, they can bankrupt you in legal fees, they can keep you going back in court if some charges get thrown out, they can reindict you on new charges. I mean, they literally can harass you for the rest of your life, even if they can't imprison you. And this can go on, and lots of innocent people over many years, going back decades, have been falsely convicted, imprisoned. Political prisoners, Mickey, you may know, is one of my core topics.
Uh-huh.
I've easily written on over 50 of them, and we have people languishing in prison for crimes they never committed. Many political prisoners, glorious people like Lynn Stewart, for defending an unpopular client too vigorously, so she's got a 10-year sentence that for her could be a life sentence. You've got another lawyer, Paul Berggren, same thing.
Yeah.
He wanted to go after the chain of the command because of war crimes in Iraq. I mean, he literally wanted to go to the top, all the way up to George Bush. Well, they stopped him by charging him with outlandish crimes he never committed.
Right, but if you want to see any semblance of justice concerning bringing the people in power in America to justice, you have to go to Spain or Nigeria or wherever. You have to go out of the country to see where people are being, these people are actually being charged with crimes. And again, in America, when you use such language as talking about war criminals like Bush and Rumsfeld and Condi Rice, this is not hyperbolic. This is not a rhetorical flurry. This is literal. These people should be tried for war crimes. But because we live in such a decayed state of information and we live in such a hyper-real, corporate media landscape, it's very difficult to gain traction speaking with people about facts and truthful matters because it comes across sounding so foreign to so many people that get all their information from the corporate media. It's a riveting uphill battle. And again, to go another example, just recently, related to the WikiLeaks issue, the State Department, the White House, barred federal employees from looking at the WikiLeaks site. I mean, this is like the ultimate principal in middle school saying, okay, kids, you're not going to be allowed to look at this database. You're not going to be allowed to look at this information. Again, how that can go and be really either unnoticed or seem like any kind of a plausible situation where in the United States of America we can have a top-down governmental decree forbidding people that work for the government. I mean, again, this is like right out of Orwell. This is like paging Winston Smith. Let's write out things out of the history books so nobody knows about them, and then let's shield what people are allowed to do and allowed to see. And I say this, too, in conjunction with what's happening with control of the web and the tiered system and so forth, paying to go fast, paying to go slow, slowing down messages that we'd rather the corporate America and the elite would rather you not see. This is a systemic effort to completely undermine any vestiges of actual democratic principle that we have left in our country.
Well, no question, Mickey, and I say it all the time when people ask me directly one-on-one. I say it on this program. We can either be complacent or think that we're by ourselves and we can't do much, but I don't feel that way at all. We need to fight this. We need to fight back. We need to get informed. We need to spread the word. We need to understand that literally whatever remnants of democracy remain in this country, they are literally disappearing in real time in front of our eyes. And if we don't do something to stop this, then one day we will wake up and we will suddenly realize that they can come get us for any reason, and they're doing it. My God, they grabbed my neighbor. He didn't do anything. Are they coming for me next? The same thing.
Well, this is the thing. This is it. The pat-downs and the gropes and the scopes at the airports, the random DUI business, all this is, basically it's like the East German Stasi papers, please. I mean, this is, again, they use the fronts of these security issues and appeals to emotion to get people to roll over. Good people, innocent people who say, well, this is the paternalistic state. We need to be safe, and we need to ferret out the enemies among us. I mean, this kind of fear-mongering and pandering to this LCD is, you know, the least common denominator, the lowest common denominator. This is no way to run a free culture. This is no way that we will be able to safeguard our rights and liberties. And you're right, we're not alone. Millions and millions and millions and millions of people in this country understand this and get this, but they're locked out of the media, they're locked out of the discourse, and the elite classes pretend publicly that we don't exist. And the reality, of course, is, Stephen, as you and I know, is that we do exist. And organizations like Project Censored, Media Freedom Foundation, among with scores of others, represent those interests and those views, pushing for a free press, pushing for a fact-based type of public discourse, and pushing for the truth to be known about our society so we can make best our own choices.
Well, absolutely, Mickey, and there is plenty that we can do. The powers that be that oppress us are scared to death of us. They need to keep us from really having a reason to want to take them on, but we need to realize that we have every reason in the world to want to take them on, and if we decide we want to do it, then we literally can beat the pants off them. We don't want a violent revolution, but we need to change things or we're heading for some very, very tough times ahead. Mickey, I know you have an event you need to take your daughter to. I'm going to let you go. As soon as I get off the air, I'm going to send you an email. You can pick it up when you get back.
Wonderful.
But I'll let you run, and I'll finish the program because I want to give an update on Haiti.
Yeah, I know, and that's a very important issue, and that's why I'm glad it worked out this way, because your listeners, you've been doing a lot of work talking about what's going on in Haiti. We did a panel on Haiti after the earthquake, and sadly, things have just gone from bad to worse off the charts. And people don't seem to either know or care. So I'm very pleased to actually let you finish out the show today and talk about such a very important issue. And I look forward to coming on with you again.
Oh, Mickey, I'll shoot you a date and an email. And I always look forward to having you back. Many, many thanks, Mickey.
Thank you, Stephen.
Well, let me just give you a brief update on Haiti. Haiti has really been plagued by, in biblical lore, I don't know how many plagues there were that affected the folks that had one come at them after another. But Haiti may be a modern case of a biblical nightmarish situation where literally it's one plague after another. And I've said, I've written, and I'm certain that sometime or other I've said on this program, I can't imagine any people anywhere for a longer period of time being more persecuted, oppressed than the people of Haiti. It goes back over 500 years, and except for a brief period after the 1791 to 1803 revolution that turned slaves into citizens, that brief period after it succeeded in 1803, you had the struggle going on for all those years until 1803, and then for a brief time after that, and then the period in the 1990s under Aristide. There were two coups against Aristide. Listeners may forget that, but he was first elected in 1990, and he took office early in the year, and I believe it was in September that a Washington-staged military coup ousted him. And then they brought him back. Clinton thought he cut a deal with Aristide. Aristide didn't cut deals. Aristide would never cut deals. The man at that time was a priest. He had no ulterior motive other than to help his people. He won a surprise victory in 1990. I believe he got roughly two-thirds of the vote. They never expected him to win, but he did. So they got rid of him. And then Clinton brought him back to let him finish out his term. Under Haitian law, a president can't succeed himself or herself, so he couldn't run again in 1996. But he did run in 2000 in a reasonably honest election. I say reasonably because there's no question who Haitians supported. But in whatever way the elitists tried to change the outcome of that election, Aristide won 90% of the vote legitimately, and maybe if there hadn't been some shenanigans, it could have been 95% of the vote. I mean, Haitians wanted nobody else. They love this man, and they've wanted him back ever since February 29th, leap year, 2004. The Marines came in and forced him out at gunpoint. We've talked about that on this program. But last January 12th, there was a terrible earthquake, killed maybe 300,000 people. To this day, the last figure I saw was something like 98% of the rubble is still there. In other words, nothing has been done. Washington promised over $1 billion of aid, didn't deliver 2 cents. At the beginning, the only thing we did was send in Marines and paratroopers. The only thing we know how to do is send in the Marines. That's all we know how to do. Or call out the local militia. We certainly don't know how to help people. We don't help people in this country. Why on earth should we help poor Haitians? Well, we didn't. But it was even worse than that. We obstructed the aid. We took over the airport. We literally obstructed aid so Haitians could get relatively little. There were billions pledged. There were much less actually delivered, but very little of that got to the Haitians. And then we had the cholera outbreak. I mean, this has gone on month after month. No help whatsoever. Conditions getting worse and worse for these people living on the street under makeshift shelter. And by makeshift, I mean plunking some poles in the ground that they can get their hands on and putting bed sheets or something overhead to shield themselves in whatever way bed sheets can shield you. Certainly can't do it if it rains. But they've been living like this, maybe 1.5 million people. And then in mid-late October, cholera struck. Just terrible. Cholera has been raging in Haiti. And the official numbers way understate the real toll. I go to a website called Haiti Operation Biosurveillance. And the most recent numbers that they've put up, they talk about known, what they believe are numbers of people affected, numbers of deaths. The last death toll I saw, the official numbers, are under 2,000, maybe 1,700, 1,800. There may be a bigger number. I haven't seen a number in the last few days, and the story is not getting quite the attention that it got a week or two ago. But let's say the official toll is 2,000, and the official number affected maybe 80,000. If that's the official number, well, Operation Biosurveillance says the numbers are at least 400% underestimated. And they also talk about what they call subclinical infections. Subclinical, I guess, meaning people may not feel well, they're infected with cholera, but either they're not sure, or they haven't accessed aid, or they haven't been able to access aid. Haitians live, many in rural areas. It's not easy finding aid. There are heroic medical workers in Haiti doing a tremendous job. Doctors Without Borders, other groups doing what they can, but there are 9 million Haitians. There's only so much they can do. They can't treat everybody. So there are lots of people that never get aid or never get enough of it. Operation Biosurveillance thinks that we may be talking about something on the order of 800,000 people. And before this is over, it may go well over 1 million. Who knows how many people may die? There's very little outside help from the Western. Well, I think there's virtually nothing from the Western countries. There is nothing from the Obama administration. I mean, we're talking about grave situation. Aid is desperately needed. Washington, Obama has literally thumbed its nose at the Haitian people. And then we had an election. We had an election last Sunday. I used it a couple of times in articles. It wasn't just a sham election. I called it an election bad enough to make a despot blush. I mean, it was outrageously bad. I've seen bad elections. I've written about bad elections. I've never seen one approach the level of this one, where literally anything that possibly could be done to rig it was done. 15 political parties were banned, including Aristide's party, Fahmy Lavalas. Nobody from Fahmy Lavalas was allowed to run. Had their candidates been on the ballot, they would have won by a huge landslide. So Washington, everything in Haiti is orchestrated by Washington. the Preval government is a puppet of Washington. He was elected, but he's a puppet of Washington. The Haitian parliament is a puppet parliament of Washington. The same thing as Afghanistan, the same thing as Iraq. These are puppet governments. They go through pretend elections, let's call them that, pretend elections. So now we have we had a pretend election last Sunday. It was disgraceful, but they did a lot more than ban parties. They stuffed ballot boxes. They let people voting for Preval's party, the Unity Party, Ignite Party, the Unity Party, their candidate, Jude Celestin, the presidential candidate. Well, nobody won a majority. I saw a report on one website saying Washington is putting the pressure on Preval to announce something, and they wanted it. The date I saw was by tonight. They were supposed to come out with preliminary election results today, and I put that in one of my articles. I haven't heard of anything yet. It may be out. I don't check the websites with information that may be breaking, but it's possible something may come out. But apparently UN or other authorities tested the waters to see, to get a sense of public reaction if this man, Celestin, Preval's man, Washington's man, was declared the winner. And they found that there would be mass outrage. So I don't know what they're going to announce, but the whole election was a fraud. Most of the candidates denounced, there were about 13, 15 candidates. Most of them denounced the election as an utter fraud. They wanted the whole thing thrown out. They wanted a brand new election. I wrote about a New York Times editorial, the voice of wealth and power, of course, endorsing the election results, admitting, I'm just about out of time, admitting that, there were lots of problems. And they mentioned a few honestly, but then they concluded that, yes, but we simply cannot go through all of the problems of throwing this out and doing it all over again. So in other words, the Time was saying, well, it may not have been a good election. It may not have been a Democratic election. But I think they had one line saying that even Haitians would not want to go through this again. The New York Times has the audacity to say what Haitians wish and what Haitians don't wish. Haitians want the bloody thing thrown out. Haitians want a democracy. Haitians want Aristide back. Haitians want a government helping them. Haitians want Washington out of their business. Haitians want no more Marines coming into the country. Haitians want the aid that was promised to live it. That's what Haitians want. Haitians are getting nothing. So they're starving. They're dying. They're under dire duress. I'll sure have programs about Haiti again. And as things develop, I'll give more updates on air. If I can get somebody on the ground in Haiti, I tried to do that today. Couldn't get the person. He was tied up. But I will try to do that again. This is one of many stories, one of many vital topics. This is not the only one by any means. But it shows the way our country operates and the way we treat other countries and our own people. We'll keep doing this in every program. Again, you know, we're on Thursdays, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and weekends at 1 p.m., and there'll be three more great programs next week. Please join us all the time and make it a regular habit.